solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino para burlar la ley, perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen el clandestino por no llevar papel. Pa' una ciudad del norte yo me fui a trabajar. Mi vida la dejé entre Ceuta y Gibraltar. Soy una raya en el mar, fantasma en la ciudad. Mi vida va prohibida, dice la autoridad. Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino por no llevar papel. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen el clandestino, yo soy el quiebra ley. Mano negra clandestina, peruano clandestino, africano clandestino, marihuana ilegal. Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino para burlar la ley. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen el clandestino por no llevar papel. Argelino clandestino, nigeriano clandestino, boliviano clandestino, mano negra ilegal.
Şoförler dikilemesi sarı dikilemesi bu sop. Şoförler kısım olsun bu işin az yer karakol bu dolaşı nesmi bir şuan Moritanya. Bu işin ağın başını geziyin. Radya aktör vahdi.
Welcome back to CKUT. Happy New Year. You're listening to La Rage du Peuple, 12 hours of special programming on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. We were listening before, that was Manu Chao, Clandestino, the music. And before that, we were talking with Arnaldo Garcia, an immigrant and refugee rights organizer based in Oakland, California. As I mentioned before, we're now joined in studio. We've been having guests all day. Earlier, Tess Tessalona from the Center for Philippine Concerns was in here. Leila from Tadamon was in here. I'm losing track now. I'm feeling embarrassed too. But who we have in studio right now is Sarita Ahuja. Hi, Sarita.
Hello.
And Sarita is an activist and organizer based here in Montreal, specifically with No One Is Illegal, Solidarity Across Borders, but also the Migrant Worker Support Center. And Sarita, I guess my first question is, and you know, you were listening with me to Arnaldo's interview, but if you can assess for us, like, the Canadian side of things, because, you know, you, like me, was observing these incredible protests in the U.S., and I know that a large part of your life in the last few months, especially over the summer, was spent side by side with Mexican migrant workers. So how did you sort of take in these huge mobilizations in the U.S. from where you were, from your perspective as somebody working with the Migrant Worker Support Center?
Well, I was looking at it not only from my place with the Mexican farm workers in the fields, but also with the history we have with non-status struggles in Montreal, starting back in 2000, and the fight against deportations, illegal deportations. So when we saw this upsurge of energy and rebellion against the American regime and national security regime, I was very excited. It's a very difficult terrain to organize in with non-status, undocumented, and migrant workers. The reign of fear is extremely, extremely intense. People are not only afraid of the normal repressive apparatus of a state, the police authorities, your immigration authorities, but also their bosses have an extreme amount of control over their lives, even to the point, the landlords. can also exert a lot of pressure and control on these people's lives. But with the Mexican migrant workers, one of the things that we talked about a lot over the summer was what was going on in the States, and that it was about time. And it was interesting to listen to Arnaldo, because he was talking about how this is the fruit of 10 years of labor. And it could be even longer than that, but I'm sure he's dating probably specific events that take place, like as we do too, to chart the trajectory of a struggle. If we look at Canada, I think there's been spurts and spats of migrant rebellion and immigrant rights voices coming to the forefront.
Can you be specific when you talk about those examples of rebellion?
Well, we can go back to the beginning of the last century. In the 1900s, the Kamagata Maru is a famous incident where people from our parts of the world, there were Muslims, Hindus, Sikhs that had taken the journey from India to come to another Commonwealth country called Canada. And at that point, the boat had stopped off somewhere, and when it arrived to the shores near Vancouver, it was denied entry on the basis of the Safe Journey Act, which allowed the Canadian state to say that if a boat had stopped elsewhere, then those people on that boat should take refuge in that first country where they stopped. And it basically allowed Canada to take no responsibility for these people, and it denied them entry. These people fought. There was support and solidarity in Vancouver from the South Asian community. People got organized and were trying to help them. It was over several months that this battle took place. And eventually, I mean, to the point where the Canadian government is so invested in these policies of apartheid and allowing only the people that they want in to maintain a white supremacist country, where they even had a special agent infiltrate the South Asian Gurdwara, the temple, to find out what these political meetings were organizing. And they never let those people in. And it's very well known. People are quite aware of what happened during World War II, where the Canadian government decided to intern Japanese Canadians, Italian Canadians. Anybody was considered an enemy of the state, and that logic prevails today. With the reforms that took place since 2001, we see that logic prevailing in a series of legislation, like the Safe Third Country Agreement, which is very similar to the Safe Journey Act, and it does not allow people to submit a claim for refugee status once coming to Canada if they've stopped anywhere else before hitting Canada. And that's a way to filter out refugees, especially at a time when we look across the globe and you see wars everywhere. Imperialist aggression, economic and military aggression, is at the root of the major humanitarian crisis that's going on in pretty much all the continents across the planet, where we've got billions of people being uprooted. And so when I was talking to the migrant workers in the fields, you know, they were looking at it not only as something that was related to what's been going on in the last 10 years, but also what's been going on, like I said, like over the century. The building up of these countries like Canada has relied on the misery and oppression and enslavement of so many workers from every part of the world, Latin America, Africa, the Middle East, and Asia, and so on. And there's been a movement in Mexico before it hit in the U.S., the braceros, they were called, were there asking for reparations for the years and years of work that they put in, and they got no compensation. And so that's also part of that movement. And I think it's a historical look that we have to start bringing out to the forefront in our struggle here. Yes, we can look to, you know, the war on terror as a moment which galvanized us, but we can look to the moments throughout history where people have also rebelled, like the Kamagata Maru and other incidents. I know that during the 80s, the Turks did a walk to Ottawa from here in Quebec to Ottawa to stop the deportation of thousands of Turks that had come at that time. And we also, Solidarity Across Borders, recently did a walk in June 2005. We walked from Montreal to 200 kilometers to Ottawa to take our demands. That is a echo of the demands of the struggles in the past, but an affirmation that we are still here and that we still continue to demand dignity.
You use the term apartheid. This is sort of one of the terms that we throw around in our immigrant justice work. And I'm wondering if you can provide a portrait of what migrant labor, the kind of migrant labor, farm labor that you've been working with over the few months looks like, and how that is like apartheid. I guess one thing I'm thinking about when I ask you that question is I've been out to Saint-Rémy, which is, I know, the place where you spent a lot of time this summer. And you can go to Saint-Rémy, which is sort of the South Shore small Quebec town, on a Thursday at like 2 p.m, and it's like any old sleepy Quebec town. And then when you get there at 7, suddenly there's literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Mexicans, and taco stands have opened up, and people are sending money back to Mexico, and it's not recognizable as what it was before. And then, of course, by 10 or 11, it's back to what it was before. This, I guess, apartheid reality that most people in Montreal have no idea about. So You spoke earlier this year at an event with Bijou Matthew about this. I know you spoke at orientation at McGill about this, about understanding how apartheid functions, even, you know, even in a city like Montreal. So can you give us a portrait of what you've seen in your last several months of organizing with the Migrant Worker Support Center?
Sure. If we look at what apartheid is, it's a set of rules for one certain class of person and another set of rules for another class of person. If we look at Palestine, it can mean that they don't have the freedom of movement, and they have to have passes and so on. In this situation with the Mexican farm workers, there's about 20,000 farm workers that come that are imported every year to work the agro-industry in Canada. We have 4,000 of them here in Quebec, distributed over, a medium to large family business that exports, okay? So 400 farms in Quebec that are utilizing the government temporary worker program. Now, for the last 30 years, the majority of workers that come in through this program are from the Caribbean and from Mexico. Now, in Quebec, the main workforce is from Mexico, but in the last couple of years, with the signing of the Organization of International Migration Accords to help poverty and so on, the Quebec is now also bringing workers in from Guatemala, where regions have been affected by the tidal waves and earthquakes and so on. So, but because you have the majority of workers from Mexico, they all have a very similar experience. And that experience is, first of all, you have to be married. You have to be a fit young man. You have to go through medical exams before you're selected. Often, you're selected from a certain region that maybe the Secretaría del Trabajo, which is the Ministry of Labor in Mexico, might have a preference for, because they have an economic agenda for that region, like Tlaxcala. If we remember, Mexico, 3 years ago in San Salvador Atenco, there was a fight against Fox's mega plan to expropriate a piece of land and build this new airport. The people rose up, fought back. That area is Tlaxcala, and it's very, it's in economic depression. So the Secretaría de Trabajo in Mexico is going to target that area to bring in a lot of the workers from that area. Oaxaca is another region. I know that later on in your program, you're going to be talking to people that are basically, led an insurrection in Oaxaca. And so these are the situations that these farm workers are coming from. Very volatile politically, high corruption, daily violence, not only from the cops, but from your general neighborhoods. The poverty is extreme, and there's no work available. So people in Mexico have a choice. You go through these programs, and you can maybe get to Canada, and you have at least a work permit. Or you try to climb that border, that wall that Arnaldo was talking about, and see if you can make it. So those that do get through these medical exams, and also, you know, sometimes you have to pay off somebody. You come up here and you pay. This is also another filtering thing. You pay for the visa in Quebec. You pay for the visa for the feds, and you pay for your work permit. So that's already a hefty amount. You're already paying almost $1,000 to come work here. And you're paying for your transportation. Mexicans have to pay for their flight there and back. And they're at the whim of the market. So this year, that's going to be going up $500. So people right off the bat, they know that the first $2,000 that they bring in, it's not theirs. And not only that, the situation in the field is, they live in houses altogether. They're in barracks. Often those houses can have pesticides. It can be used as a garage or a storage by the owner of the farm, the farm bosses. So it's very dangerous. Their health conditions are very bad. They don't have any protection. Often the water is already contaminated. I visited a lot of farms where people had red rashes everywhere on their skin, and that's just water irritation. They're constantly working and bathing in the same water that's being used in the fields. And they don't have any access to medical care. And if a worker asks for the services of a medical consultation, that is also at the whim of the farm boss. Now, there are some farm bosses that will take them just because they know that they should take them. But once they get that medical report, that is the excuse the farmer can say, well, I'm going to deport him and I'll bring somebody else. And these workers are in that position where they're highly disposable. From one day to the next, the farmer can fire the farm worker and deport them. And this is the precarity and uncertainty that these farm workers live in. So they're terrified to say anything. Someone can have a hernia and they will keep working for 2 months. Someone can be bleeding internally and they won't say anything. And this is kind of the portrait of an apartheid system where a whole set of rules dominate these people that we have no idea about.
We're talking about how many people?
In Quebec, about 400 farm workers. Now, 4,000. Yeah. Out of 400 farms, there's 4,000. And we, as a center of support, have, over the last 3 years, done a lot of education around their rights, that they have a right, first of all, for medical care. That they have also a right to healthy conditions, very basic things. And this has created a situation where more and more people are taking that stand. So if a couple guys on one farm take it and the result is good, let's say they do a wildcat work stoppage one day because the water is so bad, they really can't stand it anymore. And everybody decides, okay, this is it. We're going to do a work stoppage for as long as we can. If that works, then that's what gets told about, you know, at the soccer game on Sunday, people will talk about what happened. So the effect has been really, really good, where we have about, you know, a quarter of the people that are signing on to the union. Now, the union to them means, first of all, security on the job, where you have grievance system before you get deported. It means health and safety measures implemented. So the CSST, Norme de Travail, all these agencies in Quebec will be applied to them. And they have a right to in Quebec. It's one of the provinces in Canada that allows migrant workers to unionize. So this is going to be a tool in which we can organize them to, you know, to start defending their rights. And hopefully eventually, I dream, my vision is that this expands into other domains as well, and that it becomes a migrant union where they can disaffiliate eventually with the American-based union here called the UFCW. It's Canadian as well, but it's originally from the States. And we can be part of this movement throughout North America that is retaking back the dignity of the thousands of people that have come to work and build these countries.
Sarita, we got a lot to talk about, but let's take a little break, and we'll be back with Sarita Ahuja of No One's Illegal Montreal, Solidarity Across Borders, and the Migrant Workers Support Center after a little pause.
I ain't got no home, ain't got no shoes, ain't got no money, ain't got no class, ain't got no skirts, ain't got no sweater, ain't got no perfume. Ain't got no bed, ain't got no mind. Ain't got no mother, ain't got no culture. Ain't got no friends, ain't got no schooling. Ain't got no love, ain't got no name. Ain't got no ticket, ain't got no token. Ain't got no God. And what about got my hair, got my head, got my brains, got my ears, got my eyes, got my nose, got my mouth, I got my smile. I got my tongue, got my chin, got my neck, got my boots, got my heart, got my soul, got my back, I got my sex. I got my arms, got my hands, got my fingers, got my legs, got my feet, got my toes, got my liver, got my blood, I've got life, I got my freedom, I've got life, I've got life, and I'm gonna keep it, I've got life, and nobody's gonna take it away. That should be good.
That's groovy.
That is groovy. That was Nina Simone. She needs no introduction. You're listening to La Rage du Peuple, 12 hours of special programming at CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. I'm speaking with Sarita Ahuja, who is a local organizer and activist. Our paths have crossed many times in the streets and organizing and elsewhere. And I guess I want to ask you one of those big picture kind of questions, Sarita, because this day is about, you know, reflecting on struggle. I think you were there actually at CKLN. This is where we stole the idea from Chris at CKLN in Toronto, the idea of getting together New Year's, reflecting on the struggles and what sustains struggles, but, you know, the fight to come, taking that long-term perspective that Arnaldo was talking about earlier. Arnaldo, at the end there, he talked about, you know, interesting times and the poetry of struggle. So is there anything that's making you poetic? Is there anything that you're feeling in terms of rage and la rage? You know, where are you at after seeing the day-to-day grind of organizing with the Migrant Workers Center? You know, you've been with this immigrant justice struggle for several years now, I guess, you know, at least 5-6 years. So how are you feeling about the struggle, and how are you feeling as we look ahead to the challenges in 2007? And looking at your expression, I know you feel like I'm putting you on the spot, but that's part of the beauty of live radio. So what are you feeling? The rage? Are you feeling that poetry that Arnaldo talked about?
Yeah, I think we feel it all. The rage, the poetry, sadness, sometimes impotence. If I look right now about what's going on in the world and the position the Canadian government is taking and all the struggles and all the injustices that are taking place, of course I feel an enormous amount of rage, but I also feel that people are feeling overwhelmed because the challenges are great. I don't feel the energy that we had a couple years ago, but the work is still cut out for us. I think people's vision and determination is solid, and it's more like the ant work, and it's an imagery that the Zapatistas have used a lot when they talk about organizing in the jungle or in the communities, and it happens like ants, where it's very silent, it's very quiet, it's on the ground, but it's very unified, and it's consistent and persistent, and I feel that that's the time that we're in now. There are exciting things going on. I know that we have a guest from La Otra that's going to talk about the people's insurrection in Oaxaca, that is a shining light for all of us in these moments of dark times. It's a time, I think, too, that people are trying to reflect. I feel there's spurts of action and then moments of reflection, like Arnoldo was saying in the U.S. right now. People are thinking about how are we going to build the foundations or strengthen the foundations of this movement for the next 15 years. We're looking at a long-term war on people. The Bush administration is hard set on implementing these aggressive economic and military policies. And I feel here in Canada, too, we're just realizing how long it is. We're coming out of a euphoria, maybe in the last 5 years, where people were meeting each other, making the connections, getting out on the streets, having some impact on public opinion. But the war, media and misinformation, disinformation, and so on, is very intense. And people's lives in general is degrading, right? So even as people are active in community organizing, they're also feeling the pressures of the economic situation, where they can't pay the bills all the time. So that all that has a play in it. And I feel, at moments I feel the rage, and I think that I believe in the strength of people. And I believe that the only way to change is through struggle. And sometimes that means by any means necessary. Self-reliance, self-defense, and self-respect. Those are the foundations of what we can bring forth to the new world. Those are the things that are going to carry us forth. And I think right now we're in a moment of where we're trying to figure out how to place us in a situation where we have the ability to rely on ourselves for the long term, where the sustenance can take us through a lot of hard hits. And so I see hope, and at the same time I see major questions for us as a movement here in Montreal and in North America in general. And I'm looking forward to what's going to happen in the States on May 1st. The boycotts and the strikes, and we are going to join them here in the streets in Montreal and in Toronto and in Vancouver and hopefully everywhere else that would like to join in, and to show that it is a growing movement. I do feel it is a growing movement, but we're deepening its roots now, I feel.
Sarita Campanera, thank you for coming in, and stick around because we are going to be talking more about the situation in Mexico. It's a topic we've left towards the end of the show. We have a lot of pre-recorded audio. We have a guest in the studio with La Otra Campaña. So stay tuned for more La Rage du Peuple.
Don't you know that talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper? Don't you know talking about a revolution. It sounds like a whisper while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution, it sounds like whisper. Who are people gonna rise up and get their share? Poor people gonna rise up and take what's theirs. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution, oh no. Talking about a revolution, oh, while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution, it sounds a whisper. And finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution, oh no. Talking about a revolution, oh no. Talking about a revolution.